101.9 FM.
And good afternoon. It is 4 o'clock. Thanks for tuning in to CFRC 101.9 FM. We are located in Lower Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario. My name is Bruce, and this is Finding a Voice, a spoken word program airing here every Friday afternoon from 4 to 6 o'clock. We do stream live online as well at www.cfrc.ca. And coming up on the show today in the first hour from a December 1st workshop and launch event at 99 York Street put on by Stuart Ross, Alice Burdick, and Feed Dog Book from Anvil Press. Following the workshop portion, you're going to, and I guess what I should say, it followed the workshop portion. You're going to hear the reading portion of that event, and you'll hear guest poets, Kingston poets, Chantal Lavoie and Eric Folsom, each reading from their own work. And then you have Alice Burdick reading from and launching her new book called Ox Lost Snow Deep. This event and Stuart Ross did MC the reading portion of that event as well. And I should mention this does run over a few minutes into the second hour, but it will air uninterrupted. And then following that in the second hour from an October 24th launch event at Novel Idea Bookstore, you'll hear Stephanie Seska read from her Dotted Lines, a book of fiction. Eve Krakow from her Voice Lessons, a memoir. Jason Hero, a reading from his Like a Trophy from the Sun, a poetry. And Holly Gattery from her Widow Fantasies fiction. Before I begin, though, and we're into the last 10 days of this. Quick mention here. CFRC's annual funding drive began November 1st, runs through December 31st, so it's getting very close. I guess 11 days left. We have a goal of reaching $25,000, and I just happened to look online at our website, and it shows that we're getting close. We're as of December 19th, we're up to $18,935. It would be so cool to hit that $25,000 goal. And, you know, I mean, it's important to us, obviously, but it's important to me, too, because without the writers in and around Kingston and come through Kingston, without CFRC, there wouldn't be this radio show that's allowed me to be able to honor the work of other writers and share over, I'm just guessing, 1,200 lit events, happenings, and interviews, and and of other poets and writers the last, really, almost 15 years. For those who've already donated, my heartfelt thanks. If you haven't yet but may have been thinking about it, please check out our website, www.cfrc.ca. Click the donate button to see what it's all about. I mean, everything's in there. There are two ways to donate. It will show you that. One way, you get a tax receipt. The other way, you can qualify for gifts and merch. So every little bit helps. Thanks again. Heartfelt thanks to all of those who have donated. I know so many of you have already, but thank you very much. And if you have just been thinking about it but haven't done it yet, at least check out the page and see what you think. And again, that's on our website, www.cfrc.ca. And click on the donate bar at the top of the screen. And I'm going to do this really quick now, and then I'll be right back.
Hey everyone, this is Joseph Guido. I am CFRC's Airwave YGK Musicians in Residence Project Intern. Do you love local music and supporting local arts? CFRC's annual funding drive is running until December 31st, and your gift is needed to help us provide local musicians with modern, top-of-the-line equipment, space, and technical support to better showcase their creativity on our airwaves all year round. Help us raise $25,000 this year. Make your gift today via cfrc.ca.
Music.
Hello, CFRC listeners. This is Christina Laurie, CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative news reporter. CFRC's annual funding drive campaign is now underway through December 31st. And you can help CFRC keep our listeners informed on issues that matter with modernized broadcasting equipment and trained team members. Help CFRC hit our $25,000 fundraising goal this year by donating today at CFRC.ca.
And you are listening to CFR, Finding a Voice, I should say that. Finding a Voice here on CFRC 101.9 FM. And I'll tell you what, let's go ahead and move into the first segment today. Again, we'll repeat it just in case a few of you might have tuned in just a few seconds late and missed it at the top of the hour. But I will be airing a recorded reading and launch event that was part of a December 1st workshop and launch event at 99 York Street, put on by Stuart Ross, and Alice Burdick was the facilitator, and Feed Dog Book from Anvil Press. After the workshop that Alice facilitated, what you're going to hear are the recording of the guest poets that afternoon, Kingston poets, Chantel Lavoie and Eric Folsom. They each read from their own work. And then following that, Alice Burdick read from and launched her new book, Ox Lost, Snow Deep. And also, as previously mentioned, right just at the top of the hour, this event does run a few minutes into the second hour, but it will run uninterrupted. Tell you what, let's go ahead and just jump right into it. Here you go.
We're all here. Okay, so thank you so much for being here, and thank you to the amazingness of 99 York Street. I owe you $35 and to pass along to them. Thanks to those of you who took the workshop this afternoon. What was it called? The reins? What,
Taking the reins by the horse.
Taking the reins by the horse. Really great. Alice, workshop Alice led. My name is Stuart Ross, and I am editor of a Feed Dog Book imprint through Anvil Press. Just to see what they look like, I've got all of the Feed Dog books out there, and as well as Alice Burdick's new book. There's some other books by Alice Burdick here. There are a couple of books by Eric Folsom, and there's a book by Chantel Lavoie. So if you are so moved, please support the poets and publishers and get things signed after the readings. We're going to be hearing from Alice, launching, doing Kingston launch after launch tour of Toronto, Dundas, Ontario, and Ottawa, launching Ox Lost, Snow Deep. We're going to be hearing from Eric Folsom shortly, and we're going to be hearing from Chantel Lavoie momentarily. And at this very instant, we are very, very fortunate that Michael E. Castiles has agreed to just start things off with a song. And Michael, I mean, you probably all know Michael. Michael is a fantastic poet, collage artist, publisher, fictioneer, and I'm pleased to say that he'll have a novel out this spring from a different imprint of mine, 1366 books from Guernica Editions. Furthermore, The Lake.
Yes.
That was and it is such a really tender, beautiful, sometimes unsettling novel, and I'm really excited about that. And I also adore Michael's singing and song, so Michael Castile.
This is a song I wrote a couple months ago after reading an article in like an old Walrus magazine about, it's called My Uncle the Witch Hunter, and it was about this man named John Traynor who lived in the 1800s, and he was a witch hunter, and there was something about this woman living next door who you thought was a witch, and in the article the woman wrote that maybe his his paranoia sort of stemmed from sort of repressed sexual urges and things like that. So it's all of that sort of came to my mind when I was writing this song.
Mm-hmm. to unravel that which I fear the most. She laughs in tongues and I just can't handle it. Bear trap I'd modify its iron teeth at the side of my bed. Its protective hexes above my head. Sleep don't come cheap. No, sleep don't come cheap. Hickey, beauty queen, scrying over a glass of brine in the low house next to me. She cast her way into my sleeping mind. As I wake in chains when she grips me by the mane, it's a ride. Lake Erie is dark as sin tonight. So we ride, yeah, we ride. We ride across the sky. Metal and old bones left to guard the scene. Shadow dog materialized in a flash of fang, and its eyes are abrim with flame. So I run, yeah, I run back to where it all begun. I wish it were a mystery. The book's curse on me to last for all time. She's always on my mind, and I'm left behind in 1829. Weird sister number four, fair as foul as foul is fair. When I knock at her front door, a black swan sails away into the air. I hold back and cry as I lift my musket to my eye, but my hand shakes and I miss the shot I take. So she flies, yes, she flies away across the sky, leaving me behind. 1829.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Michael. That is amazing. Nothing like a song about sexual oppression before poetry. I always say. Okay, I meant to print out the bios at the very beginning of this tour, and I never did. So
just mix and match.
Mix and match. Well, there we go. So we're going to hear first this afternoon. Well, second. And thanks again, Michael. From Chantal Lavoie. Chantal Lavoie lives in Kingston and teaches at the Royal Military College of Canada. Chantal's verse has appeared in really, really some of the best journals in the country, including ARC Poetry out of Ottawa, Prairie Fire, and Canadian Literature, as well as in her three collections of verse, starting in 2012 with Where the Terror Lies, followed in 2021 by two books. This is about angels, women, and men. And with Meg Freer, Serve the Sorrowing World with Joy. Chantal also has an academic identity, publishes academic writing, and also writes short fiction. And I think this is the first time I've heard you read. I'm really excited to hear. So please welcome Chantal Lavoie.
for inviting me to be part of this, and thanks to Alice also for the great workshop. It was really fun, mm-hmm. and to everyone who is here. Stuart actually edited for Mansfield Press. This is about angels, women, and men. So we first met on the telephone in the midst of COVID, going through poem by poem. So I'm going to read six pieces for you, four from This Is About Angels, Women, and Men, and two from Where the Terror Lies. And before I got my own copy of this beautiful book, Ox Lost Snow Deep, we are Facebook friends, but had not met before today. And I had seen, you know, pictures of it and ads for it, and I read a review of it. And what kept coming up in this one particular review was how aphoristic a lot of your work is. So with that in mind, I tried to choose my most aphoristic poem in tribute to you, and it kind of works for today because it's called Branches, and it was written or conceived of many years ago in Bruce Kaufman's intuitive writing workshop that he did for years and years in this neighborhood when I was walking around looking at the trees in Skeleton Park. Branches. I would leave even myself for you. It might not always be true that wherever you go, there you are. A petrifying thought, like the mundane terror of nightmares that recur, although they tell me a dreamless sleep is worse. It gives no rest. Most of the poems I haven't written haven't been written about you. You can see why. When a ghost dies, the sorrow can be awkward. All that nothing multiplied. My memories rise into the trees, catch on their arms like artificial spider webs. So every night is All Hallows Eve, tangled up in dollar store investments. What is most lasting is neither nature nor artifice, not what is or isn't real, but the grimy, bone-gray marriage of the two. So I also, before I had it, read that, you know, there were these aspects of the rural, and of course we get that in the heart of the book and the cover of the book, so I chose a couple of rural-ish poems related to where I grew up in Saskatchewan. Kingdom. Mosquitoes are mostly dust, apparently, and return to dust against my bloodless hand. My heart is full of water, the sloughs are full, and my father is here in Saskatchewan, dying, which none of us believes, although we keep traveling here and lamenting the latest MRI, watching him work on this farm, humming constantly, or chanting alleluias, a habit my son picks up, along with holy smoke, and for Pete's sake. The boy is 4, and his brother, at 18 months, will not have a memory of this or former travels west. The younger, conceived after the cancer struck, our defiant gesture against death, has helped advance that of my marriage. Also, he is, they are, beautiful. For the third year running, there is a wet spring. The sloughs, as I said, are full. Ducks and even muskrat have returned from my childhood, although the cattails, too, far gone. The crops will be glorious. If there is no hail or other act from the active God to follow this fertile season. The mosquitoes love my baby. There are bites and welts all around, but most for him. They are injecting him with dust. Have I mentioned the sloughs here this year? They're full. At night, my father is haunted by the past and ghostly future. His own mistakes, his father's and his son's, these he cannot set aside. Mostly they have to do with land, selling too cheaply or at the wrong time, with being cheated, with being taken in.
Although he is most horrified that he has hurt people, it does not matter that he is not the only one. I ask if he fears retribution or the possibility of ceasing. Both. We turn the earth, attack weeds, sow the garden as if no one were dying, since we all are, in purest disbelief. And I have brought two more men into the world to feed worms and travel through the guts of a beggar. The spade fills and empties. Our hands fill and empty. The brilliant sky may be full or empty, depending where you take your stand. This one is also farmy. Thank you. My sister, who's not a poet, when she read that, was distressed by the two more men to feed worms and travel through the guts of the beggar. And I told her, well, it's from Hamlet. And somehow that was, then it was okay. Like, this way, oh, it's from Hamlet. Then it's not you saying that. I'm like, well, I am. You said a veteran first, but anyway, funny exchange. Attendance. However lyrically the sun trails its clouds, bad weather travels. A narrative that cuts across these fields, hitting and missing and merciless. Ice falls instead of rain to eat the wheat before we can. So these hard pieces of sky compete with crows, compete with food and prayer chains. Wives converse to convert trials to lessons, find teleology somewhere, or join in the curses of husbands, while bleak lines of linen scatter like children, east and west, hail and farewell. Elsewhere they harvest the gold with the rainbow. They could have had it much worse, not a drop, not one crop. Sons will not stay, and the idea of daughters as farmers is afterthought, married already or moved anyway. Countless tales of attrition are counted on fingers. Still, there are cycles and seasons of bounty. Industry might be rewarded, and death ended with resurrection. So, the other thing that I found really interesting, oh, I lost the page now. Is that when I first saw this cover, this beautiful cover and the title, the first thing I thought of with Ox Lost Snow Deep was Little House on the Prairie. Even though that doesn't happen there, but you know, Pa has to attach the rope to go to the cows and so he doesn't get lost. So I'm going to read the first stanza being about Little House on the Prairie, a poem called Deaths I've Read to My Sons. It began with the little dog, Jack, who trotted under the covered wagon with the Ingalls family, their mad father and his itchy feet chasing frontiers like storms across America. We were stunned that Jack died. I had remembered Mary's blindness, not this. Afterward, we lost Beth, the gentlest of the four March sisters, fragile and patient. Stubborn Jo finally eased her angel out of the world we were reading. And then, just like that, the small pilgrim sighed, took up her cross, laid it down, breathed her last. Last night we started Anne Frank's diary. She makes the boys laugh talking to Kitty about admirers. They frown when she says Jews had to give up their bicycles. I am 12 again, hearing her sure voice, and I'm 45, knowing what will come. Already they ask, did she write novels when she grew up? And I answer, we'll see. They read other books, fantasy, mostly about boys. There is good, There is evil. There is strangeness and courage in these too. Because they still want my voice every night, their heads resting on soft white pillows in the outer circle of bedtime light, I read other tales, what they might not find. Books about girls they should meet, about dogs, boys, fathers and mothers who love them, in true stories they might find too hard. Okay, two last, and they're both with the element of rural. This one is called Green. Green. They tell you when you're small that you will come to like pepper, mushrooms, maybe fish, the heat or rubber on your tongue, things you don't like. But they don't say, I don't recall them saying, some foods you like now will cease to please, will cloy, candy or plain noodles that taste like paste. But maybe they didn't know. High above the cars, we cross the highway in the truck, hauling wheat to the elevator. My father chewed gum, or wheat into gum. At the Highgate office, two shelves with chocolate bars. Fine yellow dust powdered everything gold. The operator's hand wiped the counter to shift the ledger for his signature, then my dad's. On the way home, an O. Henry bar. Rare, specific treat. One day, the caramel, nuts, chocolate, something tasted wrong, like sawdust, unsweet and wooden. They've tasted that way since. When I moved away and in with love, all adult, finished with farms and dirt under nails and tracked into the house, the dogs barking at coyotes and strangers in the yard, when I was citied, I got elaborate. Sliced avocado like someone in a book, simmered cider with a stick of cinnamon, then unknowingly grated it. Didn't know that was poison. I only knew I liked it. Last poem, which is also the last poem of the book that Stuart helped so much with, which is still kind of fuzzy because it was COVID and nothing. I don't remember anything really from that time, or not in a reliable way. Last poem is called Saskatchewan, and it sort of evokes the last animals that we listened to today in the prompt, because it starts with geese. The geese swarm overhead while mosquitoes flock below. Do you love or hate them differently if I use new words? Reverse the verbs. Swarm, flock. Can you feel otherwise than the V cleaving the blue sky and the buzzing penetrations without your mind's permission and just because they are? Lakes are joining up now. Farms losing fields to mud. They will come back richer, silted, open to new seeds for other generations and machines. We might call all these things by other names. They will remain beyond our narrow trails of breath and ink, our puny trials and songs, our houses, barns, our tractors, fences, bones. Thank you.
Wow. Thank you so much. I knew we had three fantastic writers this afternoon, and now I know that we have three fantastic readers this afternoon. Yeah. Wow. I don't remember this guy's name, so I just gotta get that document back up here. So we're gonna hear next from Eric Folsom, And I first became aware of Eric, I think it was in the 80s that you did the, your Manic, was it?
Next Exit.
Yeah. And got to know Eric a little bit more when I was living here briefly in, I don't know what year it was. When was I here? 2010. I'm just wasting, I'm killing time until I can find the little bio here. Where's the little bot? Where's the little, how does Facebook work? How do you find an...
He's just a guy.
Oh, there he is. He's just a guy. He's a regular guy. And yet his work is so special. Now, I'm so thrilled that you're to hear you read here. Eric's published 4 books of poetry, two of which are... one of which is here, and 3 chapbooks, one of which is here. The book is Le Loutre, a poetry narrative, and the chapbook is Lift Bridge, a garland of anti-guzzles, which mentions Pepe Le Pew, which is very disgusting that the mention of Pepe Le Pew makes any book of poetry better. I was really excited to see that. Eric has been a resident of Kingston for more than half of a century. And was organizer of the Cargo Culture Reading Series, publisher of the poetry zine Next Exit, which is in fact one of the first ever sort of chapbook format poetry magazines I ever saw. Very exciting. And Eric was Kingston's Poet Laureate from 2011 to 2014. Please welcome Eric Folsom.
Thanks. I'll start by apologizing for the state of my voice, but it can't be helped this week. Yes, thank you to my grandchildren sharing with me last weekend. And I've been writing about... my current project is to write about growing up, which for me was in Massachusetts and neighboring parts of New Hampshire and Maine in the 20th century. Mm-hmm. So it's like different century, different country. It's almost feeling exotic now. But it didn't at the time. It all seemed normal. But then what did I know about normal? And now this first poem, Province Like 1954, this is me at about age 2.5, and I can't remember a thing, so I'm making everything up. And my sister at about maybe 5 months, and this is the granddaughters that I mentioned. They're that age now. They're like 2.5 and 5 months. So, nice little nice little intro. Province Lake, 1954. These are spurious memories, a fog of lyrical impressions, granite cogs grinding the bouncing car, sandy track veering up glacial hill, a picnic table, buttered brown bread, tomatoes sprinkled with white sugar, cucumbers sliced and peeled like coins. Really, only these 4 photographs can be relied on, supplemented by a dozen summertime tales. Nests of shade below pines in the grove, footfalls softened by showers of needles. Down our lane, stout trunks framed the lake, a blue portal to the narrow beach. A rowboat, pickerels, crayfish and turtles, green postcard hills of Maine nearby. Grammy Pickard and my mother, still in her loose maternity top, moved from tent to trailer to table, setting out plates, tending the stove, dappled shade dense over outdoor meals, big smiles for ordinary chores. Is the next photo a different day? Grammy seems to have changed her shoes. Dad cradles my baby sister, eyebrow raised while he bottle feeds. Glance at the camera person who takes the picture of him nursing. And I squirm on Granny's lap, saying something loudly no one hears. Phoebes and chickadees spoke their names. Full frogs demand a jug of rum. Chipmunks chipped and scampered away. I think we were happy, but who can say? A 2.5-year-old child is not a narrator you should count on. And at 72, my current view might be influenced by nostalgia. Flashlights and sweatshirts late one night. We walked together through darkened woods, up the knoll above the highway, and we saw lynx with flaming eyes, double light beams luminous, and she blinked once, then turned for good. Decisive forest relative, whom we cannot follow into the shadowlands. A learning environment. 8 colors arranged in small boxes of crayons. Full extent of our palettes as preschool artists. Violet, blue, plum, and burnt sienna came later. Mild euphoria as our limits fell away. Little fists bearing down for stronger density, boldly risking the crayons would not snap in two. After moving to Reading, I was old enough to start kindergarten at Christopher Robin, which I assumed was a place, not a character. A well-kept colonial farmhouse on Grove Street, climbing roses on the terrace, cornfields out back, our town expanding from rural to suburban. Above my finished pictures, I wrote my first name, complete with a lowercase I, topped by a circle that I filled in completely to create a shape. A stylish touch, or so I must have imagined. Something to show mother after being taken home. Station wagon bumping over Willow Street tracks. At playtimes, we often shared piles of wooden blocks. The alphabet figured in primary colors. I liked best arranging them horizontally, editing as I went, and searching for what's missing. Letters immobilized within somebody else's tower. Right near the base, essential for stability. Another day, I stared at the wall calendar while it dawned on me that something was different. What on earth had they done with 1956? Then who was this intruder, 1957? The old calendar did not fit. Like shoes outgrown, time's emblem thrown away because time moved on. Under blue skies, one recess with grass turning green, I stood on the back steps, observing other kids. How girls clustered and chattered loudly on the right, and looser, boisterous swarms of boys swirled on the left. How amazing, I thought. No grown-ups were nearby, and yet they neatly sorted into all girl and all boy. What made them so smart, I wanted to know. And how did they choose where they wanted to go? I'm still not sure gender really is. But if you say it does, I respect you. Dragon Corner. Mineral Street had no minerals worth noting. Though a town businessman once dreamt of bottling spring water from his property on the hillside. Our colonial museum, Parker Tavern, had not poured a beverage in centuries. And we never saw dragons at Dragon Corner. The T intersection at Woburn and West Street. As a child of Reading Heights, I did not question the distinct absence of fire-breathing lizards. We sat our bikes on kickstands and played touched football. Raw kinetic charm of pursuit and evasion. Bought cold soft drinks and bags of Wise potato chips from the Dragon Corner store with its creaking door. Stared at Bob while he chugged a quart of orange juice, but failed to unearth clues about missing dragons. Instead, we sighted Jerry Jingles on the loose, trotting nonchalant up the center line again. Handsome horse about town looking for a good time. Bored with a damp paddock among pussy willows, weathered stable leaning over polywog marsh, feeding a brook that becomes the Aberjona, sliding down to the mystic cities of adults. Acorns scattered beneath sweet fern in the uplands, lady slippers shaded on the mossy pathway. A chunk of fool's gold, an empty shotgun casing, give us a liberty or give us mythology. The stern bronzed gazes of muscular forefathers, their cocked hats pulled poems with muzzle-loaded quatrains. We glorified tea parties, ferocious rebellion. Curious and beautiful ethnogenesis, highly selective definitions of freedom. We ought to sing other songs, tell other stories. Oh, little town of Reading, on a midnight clear, when the Baptist Church burned in 1965, voicing services to Joshua Eaton School, flames also destroyed Reading's last town-made organ. The wood and metal pipes voiced by local workers, employed at the organ manufactory, and consoles built at the church organ company, sublime instruments shipped all across the eastern states. Economics diminished renowned local firms before the conflagration turned artistry to ash. An old hymn asked, were you there when they crucified my Lord? And as a kid, I was nearly certain no one was old enough to have been there. Really? But if you were, you'd never have talked about it. You keep things to yourself, and that was the primary rule. Joshua Eaton School was named for a soldier who perished in the Revolutionary War, the only Reading man to die in conflict. The school sits on farmland his family once owned. When the word came, Joshua mustered, got my accents changed.
Yeah,
yeah, it's awesome.
When the word came, Joshua mustered on West Street by Dragon Corner before the place got its name, and then marched with his men to Lexington and Concord, to trade musket balls with red-coated soldiers, twisting history sideways, if not upside down. Joshua's father owned a male slave named Cato, whom he noted in his will after the horses. Reading and nearby towns enslaved about 20 humans, according to colonial records. There's good reason to think Cato fought in the war with valor, gaining liberty, manumission, a new home, a new family in a different town. Maybe the next school should be named after Cato. A young farmer in the early 1800s, dwelling at the corner of Woburn and West, installed a new weather vane shaped like a dragon, rampant with one paw extended, great wings unfurled, delighting local kids who from that day after hold the young farmer's property, Dragon Corner. I should stop.
Was that one poem that you read?
Well, the Dragon Corner, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Starts with the dragon, ends with the dragon.
Yeah.
Yes, there's a dragon eating its tail.
Yes.
Okay. I'll skip one because the last one is a little longish also, but not as. Okay. You send me. I tumbled down from Reading Heights, traversed the tar street, wooden bridge, trudged uphill to Reading Highlands, day in, day out for 6 school years. No matter what squalls morning brewed, in floppy boots, in good brown shoes, to the Stoic Summit, Island School, our homegrown yellow brick castle. A wooden railroad bridge marked where commuters heading to Boston once caught their trains from the Highlands. At the bridge's Vine Street end, Keene's store still sold the Globe, the Boston Herald, Pixie Sticks, Bazooka Joe. Bottled root beers sat in chilled water. Old platform buried under weeds. Queen Anne houses with long porches, Victorians in need of paint. The school's imposing porte cochere, elegant entrance for grown-ups, while we formed two separate lines for boys and girls' basement doorways, herded to big stone sinks for washing, made clean for anthems and prayers. Out to the west, we were the Heights, they were the Highlands, nearly downtown. Church steeples, wicked old graveyards, the library, Western Otter. Highland School had fairy tale turrets, an architectural pedigree. All we kids knew was apple trees, the best stepping stones in rain-filled brooks. The curving stairs inside the turrets, curlicues of Palmer penmanship, tangled footwork of square dancing kids, duck for the oysters, dig for the clams. When a Russian rocket blasted off with the stray dog named Laika inside, she never came home, poor thing. I thought how adults were carelessly cruel. But could that mean Space Cat meets Mars was somewhat vaguely plausible? Kittens floating in zero gravity, whose coils never punctured, spacesuits, our school library overstuffed with vapid Tom Swift adventures, Telstar spinning beeping code, our patient enigmatic moon, Mother Dear, how big is the night? Must I wait until the moon is full? Sam Cooke on the radio crooning about how his darling sends him. I went to school and came home one day. Invisible tunes spun the airwaves. Spotted too many cars on our street. As if something bad had happened.
Nobody else reads like you. So a couple of books of Eric's are available here, and a couple of books of Chantawai, Book of Chantal's is here. And we're going to be hearing from Alice Burdick. Alice Burdick comes all the way from Lunenburg, Nova Scotia, to be at 99 York Street. And I'm going to do this way. So what else do I know about Alice? I edited five of Alice's books, which has been one of the great privileges of my poetry life. I'm always astounded, confounded, and redound. Is that what redound mean? Maybe it rhymes.
Yeah.
I'm redounded by her poetry. I don't know. I don't think that makes any sense. I've learned so much from reading Alice's work so deeply and from hearing Alice read from her work. This will be the fourth time I've heard you read this week, and it's always like a great experience. Alice has been publishing poetry, essays, and very recently cookbooks for over three decades. Alice started out in the very lively and sometimes cantankerous but always vital world of the micropress, where she produced chapbooks and also helped coordinate small press fairs in Toronto and in Vancouver in the 1990s. Alice has taught poetry workshops to people of all ages, through all the organizations that exist in the world. Through several organizations.
Broadcast on all channels.
Alice is one half of the collaborative project Trail Reports, alongside musician and artistic director Aaron Donovan. Her poetry has been featured in the Woodlight short film series. Can we find that somewhere?
Yes.
On Vimeo?
Yeah,
cool.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. But it has been screened across Canada, so you've probably already seen that.
It's everywhere.
Alice grew up in Toronto, Ontario. Has lived in many, many places, and now, as I mentioned, lives with her family in Lunenburg, Nova Scotia. And I'm so happy to be introducing Alice to those of you who don't know Alice's work and some of you who might know Alice's work, and I'm excited to hear you read again, Alice. Welcome.
All right.
Thank you, Chantal. Thank you, Eric, for those incredible readings. They were so captivating and really, really lovely. So it was really great to hear you both reading. And thank you so much, Stuart, for shepherding me all across Ontario, dropping me off in various locales and letting me loose on the populace. Appreciate it. And it's so nice to see you all here in this house, this wonderful house with many histories, as so many houses do have, but ongoing. So these are long poems. And they're different size long poems, so I'm going to read a couple of the shorter long poems here. And I'm starting with the title poem, Ox Lost, Snow Deep. Ox lost, redhead with information. Stretching out in the past, dedication to a deadline. Wake up and travel into a black hole. Nebulous encounters with a fuel company. Sitting at a table with a steaming cup of coffee, missing the cream the cow once gave. Where did the cow go? Who left the gate open? A spacious entropy, sunlight sparking fiber off the tablecloth, shadow of a loose hinge on the cupboard. The snow is so deep I can't find my soul. It is not available for social events. Jealous husbands provide a drone squadron in the general atmosphere. The snow is so deep we'll stop working. The big industry in town is ignoring the big industry. Don't be a smart ass. Pull the thread dangling from your pant leg pocket. Pull it in a long stream of sound, a single sustained F note. Breathe these fibers, a warm place deep under snow. We'll stop working and stare back at the bosses. It is a long day in the shadows of shift changes. Who will hire me? The thing is, I like to be silly. And the other thing is, I like to be serious. Water is a real stick up my sleeve. Gracious crumbs trail from your pant leg. It is Tuesday. Step on small plastic figures. Light on a tablecloth because it is daytime. Light from a corner because it is evening. Don't be a smartass, be smart about it. Pull up your socks and beat a drum. The snow can be your drum if you don't have a drum. The snow is so deep, sound is a thread hanging loose. We work on the snow. We work on the lost ox, a red-headed ox with information. Data drives the farmstead. I pull a thread of light from snow. The thing is, sound is silly. The thing is, sound is serious. One day a bubble burst in deep snow. Light burst the bubble into sound. Gracious nods, old notes given to the old newspaper. A man at a kitchen table in suspenders, drinking coffee. A wild vagueness. A lack of helpful deadlines. We wait for the notice. It is either yes or no. Those are the two possibilities. A no and a yes can be silly. A no and a yes can be serious. Like a car arcing over a low bridge through ice into winter water. Winter pulls a thread of sound, so bubbles climb, light suspenders. A man sits and waits for winter to be silly. The snow is deep and will not work. There is a benefit system, an old newspaper. The date given. It is too deep to work. We have all sat down and we wait at the table. Coffee? The sustained F note. Ice cracks the leather saddle as it strains in winter light. Cows do not come home. Snoring is silly, but snoring is serious when breathing is strained. Coffee is a daily drink. Shadows on heads when eyes look through the kitchen window. Wild suspenders on long torsos. Deep snow is scheduled for the past. Eyes are silly, but eyes can also be serious. If anyone breaks the doorknob, there will be no way in or out. Real Daily News features a lost ox who tends to stomp the same trail through deep snow. One ox knows another ox, often yoked together. Please, if you have information, provide it forthwith. Wanted in a small way. Wanted in a way that is silly, a way that is serious. Longing crawls an extended note, thread of F through afternoon light. A break in light. For stillness. The feature is almost on, it has almost begun. Snow is so deep, the oxen have stopped working. They've left the fields for heat and a future. Where did the road go? I feel it has ended in a small room, another small room. I feel the road has ended. The road here is long, it is silly. Serious. There are no hallways here. A room leads into a room leads into a room. Irons are in buckets hung near the stove. Imagine the heat. Snow is an idea in summer. Snow is silly, so serious. We will pay a reward just for information on the suspended lost ox. And this is Reservoir. It's a Luna Bird poem. When you were talking, Eric, I could hear so many sounds of, like, it's an East Coast kind of sound, that sort of thing. So, and you kind of got into it there a little bit. Reservoir behind the wall tells the town to hold itself strong against the foaming hordes of discontent. Humor wins the day handily. A smoke on the steps nearby. A low groan in the wind. The pages turn on their own. Women walk in fast groups and slow groups. We do it all the time. Lupins rise on the sides of beaten paths. I could sleep for a long time if I knew the method. Parsonage on the hill holds the senior debater. So sure there's a way to control information, it's a fine handle on the spigot. Children rise as small creatures near the woodpile to find employment in the old town. Borders are extensive and the horses mark them. Reshewed boundaries between timelines. High rails are always invisible here. Bury the evidence of connection. Declarations of amorous intentions are subsumed by the messengers. Greasy bear shape on the side of the highway. Hold my feet in prayer. It's always the same form. The light forms the same shape. The air works well with others. Graded on a curve into the future and the past always attendant. A small hat tilts on the face, a baby of the moment almost indistinguishable from dappled leaf light, so still, so possible, the shape of a new word. Hold the fire still, feet to the fire, high-top flames lick up the body stalks. My mind is not at full capacity. It's a glorious flight of flowers. The same time motion takes is the air and bird sound also.